unfortunate that we have to bow down to those mm-hmm. demands. But yeah, I mean, that's true. It's understandable.
Especially, well, we need allies to rely on, especially now that the oil sands are dead.
Yeah, that's true.
That was all we had.
Yeah, it was.
Now we just need wheat farms.
We had a good 20 years going.
We did.
It was
pretty solid. Money. I was watching an interview of on the National, and they're interviewing somebody from, the name escapes. Is it Fort McMurray?
Yeah.
There's one of the guys that had just lost a job there, and he was doing the stay at home dad thing.
Yeah.
And his wife was working at a restaurant, and he wasn't working, and he had said something that I thought was funny. He's just like, I just want a job where I'll have sweat in my brow and know that I earned my keep. It's like, then go join your wife at the restaurant, what are you doing at home? you don't honestly just want any job to leave sweat on you. You want a job that'll leave sweat on your brow and give you an insanely inflated income.
Yeah.
60, that's what you want. Yeah. And I want it to be six figures. I should have included that.
Yeah. Well, that's so funny.
Don't want just any job. If you wanted just any job, you'd have it.
Well, even I don't know if this is like an urban legend or something, but even the McDonald's down there, you would hear like, oh yeah, you can go to Fort Mac and get a job at a McDonald's for
like $25
an hour. You're working
down
at a McDonald's in Fort Mac.
Yeah.
I don't care how much you're making.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird thing. I was always like, I can't see myself ever going to and working at the oil sands. One, because I'm a wimp and a dandelion.
Not nearly tough enough.
A dandelion, but also because morally, it just seems so insane. Like, it seems so messed up to go and actively, contribute to that industry.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I understand that, like, everybody's
got to come from somewhere.
It's got to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, you can say it can come from somewhere, but if you can do it without leaking waste into the river, that would be nice. maybe if there weren't salmon with golf ball sized tumors on their heads.
That's more
in
meat
in the river.
That's just more meat on the salmon.
That's true.
Tumor meat is a delicacy in many areas.
I mean, you're making some good points there.
I am.
I really missed out.
Yeah, you did. Have you had tumor fish?
No. Is it good?
It's not at all.
No.
But there's more meat.
Oh. It tastes significantly worse.
Yeah,
but there's
more of it.
A lot more.
Yeah,
of
it's the McDonald's premise. Yeah.
Oh. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Their filet of fish is allegedly just a tumor from a Athabasca River salmon.
Yeah, tumor from a tumor fish.
Yeah.
That's why it's 100% Canadian. They always talk about all their Canadian stuff of sorts. You can't get tumor fish anywhere else. We have the best tumor fish.
All filet of fish allegedly now come with a small pocket of tar in the patty.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is that truth?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot like a tumor pustule.
Yeah.
Instead of pus. It's Alberta tar.
Yeah, so, and that should be there.
Allegedly.
Yeah, exactly.
Allegedly.
Tartar sauce. I've heard someone say.
Yeah. Not my opinion.
Allegedly.
May not be fact.
No, may not be fact at all. We don't want McDonald's to sue us because their breakfast is delicious.
Is it? Do you think it is?
It's accessible.
Yeah, yeah. It's there.
It's there. It is really what you should answer that with.
Yeah.
McDonald's breakfast. It's there.
It's there.
Yeah.
McDonald's breakfast. You'll regret it.
Yeah.
McDonald's breakfast.
Well, McDonald's
diarrhea.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's not like McDonald's breakfast you'll regret it. Some McDonald's breakfast you already regretted something.
Yeah.
Like you're there because you feel like garbage and you were probably hungover and you tried to get there before 11 to get it.
McDonald's breakfast. Liquid crap at 10 a.m.
Yeah, exactly.
There we go.
Especially if you get it with the coffee.
That really gets stuff going.
Oh, good man. Job.
That's what I miss about coffee. I stopped drinking coffee.
Did you? Yeah. I only just started.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was not ready for it at all.
No?
I was not. No. I wasn't ready for like the half-hour timer. Like, it just pulls the pin on a grenade.
Yeah.
And you've got 30 minutes, and you better be ready.
Yeah.
It's going to take up some of your morning.
You're getting loose.
Yeah.
Real loose.
Oh, my God. Why didn't anyone tell me about this? So like, try coffee. It's awesome. I got a little single cup maker at home.
Yeah.
And it was delicious, and I had access to coffee, and I wasn't going to McDonald's or Starbucks anymore for it. And I learned that 30-minute window.
Yeah.
And it is so crucially important. Like, how do people have a coffee in the morning and then go commute to work for 40 minutes?
I don't. Well.
That's too much time.
They're getting up really early.
Yeah.
You gotta make sure, like 4 a.m.
You gotta leave yourself that window.
It's really like a terrible circle because you get up earlier, you need more coffee.
Yeah.
You're taking a longer dump. So you just end up never going to bed, and just those hours from, you know, 11 p.m. through to 6 a.m., you're just on the toilet.
Yeah.
And drinking coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is just increasing the problem.
No.
That's why I quit.
It's a cleanse.
Really. Yeah.
It's a cleanse.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's a cream and sugar delicious cleanse.
So what, you just started drinking coffee? Is that
pretty
what you
much?
Said?
Yeah. I would always go to Starbucks. I would occasionally go to Starbucks like once every couple of weeks or something. But I wouldn't get coffee. I would just get their cake in a cup. Because if you're
their cake is
If you're going to Starbucks and just getting like black coffee and paying for it, you're an idiot. Like if you're going to Starbucks, you're going there for liquid cake, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
and it's caramelly and whipped creamy, and good. But I never had coffee regularly at home, and then I got this little thing called an AeroPress, which makes single-press coffee pretty quick, and it was the greatest and the worst, because I had to learn that window. But now I know my window, so I've adjusted to that.
How much coffee are you drinking in a day?
Maybe 2 cups.
That's not bad at all.
No, yeah.
So you can, that's a healthy amount.
I just started, though, so I'm still sensitive to it, and soon that'll be deadened.
You get, like, all jazzed up and like,
yeah, it's still at the point where, like, I feel okay in the morning, and I drink coffee, and I feel great. I'm not at the point where I feel garbage, and I drink coffee, and I still feel garbage. I just had to drink the coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets to the point where you feel like trash.
Yep.
You need to drink coffee so that you don't feel like trash with a headache.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's really, the coffee withdrawal headaches are some of the worst.
I bet they're off the chain.
They're pounding and relentless. I actually quit because I got a cold and I, like, a really bad flu, and I couldn't get out of bed for like 3 days. And I went like, well, I already have a headache.
Yeah.
And I'm already feeling like terrible, so I don't really need to drink coffee. I don't have anything to do. I'm just lying here. And in fact, I want to go to sleep, so I don't want to drink coffee. And then after 3 days, 3-4 days, I'd gotten over the flu and the coffee withdrawal.
Oh, man.
And I went, I feel, like, pretty good right now. Maybe let's see how long we can take this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's actually been over a year now. But
ooh.
I have like, a coffee that's here and there. Like, I'll drink, like, I'll have a sip of someone's latte or something. Oh, I miss it. Oh boy,
that's not drinking a coffee here or there.
Yeah.
That sounds like a desperate. Like, can I just have a little sip of yours?
Tastes so good.
Like, I can't be trusted to have my own.
I really can't. No, I can't. I'll go into like Vietnamese restaurants and I'll look at that iced coffee they have with condensed milk.
Ooh.
Have you ever had that?
Yeah,
I just go blah.
Yeah, I discovered that because Sheena was telling me about like the wonders of condensed milk. Because I thought it was just milk in a can. I didn't know it was pudding.
Yeah,
and she bought it from the grocery store for me to have in my coffee, and it was the greatest experience of my life. I didn't know you could just put pudding in coffee and like it's an okay thing to do.
Yeah.
And
I
even posted on Facebook and it's like, I just put condensed milk in my coffee. This is the greatest thing ever. And one of my friends put down, he's just like, oh, that's called Vietnamese coffee. I'm like, oh my God, can I have like Vietnamese cereal and like Vietnamese everything else?
Vietnamese cereal.
Everything.
Oh my God, condensed milk Cheerios.
Oh, condensed milk Fruit Loops. Diabetes train.
Oh,
wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That would be crazy.
That would be just a cloud every morning.
Ooh.
Oh.
Oh God. Yeah. I'm just thinking about Fruit Loops. Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops are amazing. Yeah.
You know, you're like, you have an addictive personality when someone mentions something you haven't had in a long time.
Yeah.
You feel like, oh, well, oh my God, I have to.
Yeah,
like,
I need to do that now.
Ruins your train of thought.
Yeah.
You know? I'm just thinking about Fruit Loops.
I just hate Fruit Loops real bad.
Yeah, I just want, I mean, just give me some Fruit Loops maybe. Like, I just want some Fruit Loops.
Just a few.
I know.
Just a few of the purple ones.
I'm not getting back on Fruit Loops. I just like want a little taste.
Yeah, just a little taste.
Of Fruit
just
Loops.
Something to get me through the day.
I want some Fruit Loops. Yeah, just a green one.
Yeah, just the green ones.
On,
oh, I want the green ones.
Those are the least sugary.
Yeah. That special edition blue Fruit Loops?
Yeah,
Oh, my God.
Oh.
They all taste exactly the same.
Remember those Apple Jacks commercials where they're like, you can send us an email and tell us what color you think the new Apple Jacks should be. And meanwhile, everyone was like, who eats Apple Jacks? Who cares about Apple Jacks?
Who cares? The color isn't going to make this better.
No, I mean, that was a huge campaign in the 90s, 2000s, like Apple Jacks recoloring. Apple Jacks.
My favorite cereal thing in the 90s was the Lion King spoons.
Oh,
that's what I remember most clearly.
And they were terrible plastic, so they would get like...
they would degrade so fast.
Yeah, they would get stained from all the milk and stuff and like get all white. And,
yeah.
But they were cool spoons.
They were very cool spoons.
Totally forgot about that. You could taste the plastic
yeah.
as you were eating the cereal.
Oh God, it probably gave us all tongue cancer. Well, tongue and mouth cancer.
That's where my childhood died. It was sucked out of me by the
by the plastic
by
spoon.
The plastic Lion King spoon.
Lion King spoon from the 90s.
Yeah,
it killed us all. Yeah. It really did.
And those brain freeze straws at 7-Eleven. Did you ever?
No, I didn't have a. There was no 7-Eleven in Whitehorse.
No,
I was lit. No,
oh,
we didn't. We just had this. We had this place called Tags, and it was the for the
Tags.
Longest time. It was the only. It was a kind of a gas station, but it also had hot food, kind of like 7-Eleven.
Okay.
And it was the only 24-hour place to get food. And literally the only time anybody ever ate there was at 3 in the morning after the bars closed down. There would be a lunch rush at Tags, and I have no idea how I didn't die. Because he'd be standing there with all these greasy, drunk people, and he'd be like, yeah, give me some of the hot wings. And he'd, like, take your money from you and put it in the register and, I don't know, wipe his hands everywhere, and then just go give you fistfuls of the chicken into the thing and then give it to you like it was just food poisoning in a tray.
Oh, my God.
And never... Well... I don't know if it ever got to me or not, because you can't tell if you got food poisoning from a place if you're blackout drunk every time you go there. Because the next morning might be a hangover.
Yeah.
It might have been the chicken wings. You don't know.
Yeah. Hangover, really bad hangover and food poisoning have probably the same
very similar
symptoms.
Yeah. So that's how their business model works.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. It works.
Oh, my God. What else? What other good stories you got from Whitehorse? That's so fascinating that you grew up in Whitehorse.
I don't know. I don't know too many stories.
No.
It's easy to drink too long, especially at music fests and stuff, because like the sunlight is up all the time. So usually darkness is a good indicator that it's a decent time of night. You should probably go fall asleep somewhere.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen up there. So the only time I've ever done like 20-hour benders has been up there, because you don't know. You don't know the difference.
No.
Like, you start off your day with a nice sourtoe cocktail, and then you just off you go.
Okay, wait, what's that? What?
You don't know the sourtoe cocktail?
No, what's a sourtoe?
Oh, it was all over the internet. The sourtoe cocktail, it's in Dawson City in the downtown hotel.
Okay.
And it's a big tourist attraction. And what it is that you pay this crazy guy in a paddle boat captain outfit.
Okay.
He sits in the corner of the bar. And you bring a shot of your choice to him, and you pay him $20. And he does this whole ceremony where he does a little poem and everything about the origins of this. And then he drops a severed pickled human toe into your drink, then you drink that. And you have to you can't swallow the toe. But you have to let it touch your lips in order to get the little certificate that you did it. So yeah, that's the sour toe cocktail. It is a severed corpse, piece of a corpse in a drink.
Whose toe is it?
They're donated. They're donated after an accident or frostbite, usually, or I think some people, like, after they die, put in their will, like, donate some of my toes to the sour toe cocktail.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a famous thing. But they are hard to get. And they're reused, yeah. Like, he'll spritz it a bit with some, could just be water, and then pats it in some paper towel, and then it goes and touches the next guy's lips.
Ew.
So, because you can't use a different
toe. He's got a drawer full of severed toes.
Yeah,
that
he's one of the few people allowed to do that in public. Because
yeah.
Who doesn't have a drawer of severed toes? But this guy's just allowed to make money off of it.
Oh, my God. He's like, they're real hard to get. I haven't been murdering people.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you mean?
I've only got a few. I don't have, hundreds at all.
No, what do you mean?
All those feet washing up on the shore from him.
Yes, the feet. The feet. What do you think the feet are?
They're it's suicides.
Yeah.
And people that have died, the corpse rots around the shoe, and then the foot is preserved inside the shoe because it doesn't rot at the same rate, and then you just have shoes, feet floating around.
Easy as that.
It's all science.
Yeah.
There's no mob mystery murderer thing. It's just part of how the body decomposes, and because it's in the shoe, it floats. So it gets to float around everywhere.
Here's my next question. Why don't we just wrap people in shoes if we don't want them to decompose?
That is an excellent question. I have no logical answer.
We can, if the shoes are stopping a foot from decomposing, I feel like that might be the key to immortality.
It might be.
I want to wrap myself in a new Yeezy Boost 350S.
That's the physical defense part. It's making sense.
Oh my God.
That's part of his business plan. Yeezy's physical defense is just being wrapped up in his shoes. Oh, the next show guys are here.
Here we go. Perfect. So coming up next, we got... Community Living Show. Gavin, you got anything you want to plug?
What do I want to plug? This Friday, I will be hosting this fantastic open mic / book show, pro-am show at the Railway Club in the Mermaid Room in the back. It starts at 8, so it's relatively early, and people always bring... It's a bringer show, so comics bring a couple of people. The crowd's always really good, and there's always a couple of pro drop-ins, and it's fantastic.
Cool.
And I'll be hosting, and it'll be great. So do check that out. That's Friday at 8 at the Railway, and that's what I got for now. So, yeah.
Awesome. And we're on here every Thursday, but you already do that, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., or sometimes 9:15, as happened today.
Yep.
Alex didn't call in today. he must be lost.
He's still
buried alive.
Yeah. Oh. Keep an eye out for that RAV4 and Teresa Halbach green, which I think is the only color that car comes in.
Ew. Yeah, RAV4 really took a dive in their stock thanks to Netflix.
Or the murder car.
Oh, no. Yeah. All right, yeah, so we have email, 604podcast@gmail.com. We love getting emails from you. Please email us. Mm-hmm. It's great. I like reading them. I'll read your stuff on air if you want me to.
Yeah,
we
no
also
matter
have a
what it is.
Yeah, no matter what. Gratuitous.
Yeah,
vulgar.
Please, yes.
We also have a podcast if, you know, you want to hear uncensored version of basically exactly what you just heard. So, yeah, you can find us on iTunes, Vancouver, comma, right, question mark. That's it. We'll see you next Thursday.
Bye, everybody.
FunDrive 2016 has started online. The donation page has officially gone live and is waiting for you. Head on over to citr.ca/donate to help us reach our goal of $40,000 to continue growing our local arts and music scenes in our diverse cultures. By donating, you'll receive awesome CITR prizes like notebooks, swag bags, LPs, and on-air shoutouts. It's all starting now.
Good morning and welcome to the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Networks and here live at CITR UBC Radio. Wow, it's been an interesting morning, just dealing with traffic and everything getting here. So today we are here to speak with Omar Lanani.
Hello.
Just give me a second here to get his mic in place. Hold on. There we go. Okay. And now you should be okay. What's that?
Should I wear this?
Yeah.
Wear it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So he's here to talk to us from an organization called Right to Grow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
And you can be found at righttogrow.org, is it?
Yeah, righttogrow.org.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're talking about something that every parent out there needs to hear about their kids and overbites, right?
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So why don't you start with a little bit about your personal story.
Sure.
And then we can get into some like really serious questions about what we can be done to prevent some of the things you know. Okay?
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well, here's the bottom line. You heard of foot binding?
Mm-hmm.
Foot binding was banned in China 200 years ago.
Yeah, because of all of the, orthopedic foot problems that were caused to little girls, right?
Yeah. For the rest of their lives, right? You have this foot that is like a tennis ball, right?
Right.
And so, what if I told you we still did a form of growth binding or growth stunting today?
I would actually have to ask you, where is this being done and how is it being done?
Okay, so it is being done in orthodontic offices. And it's something we've kind of accepted as commonplace. But what will happen in, and it's not all practices, but in many practices, a kid will walk in with the parent and the orthodontist will say, you know, your kid is buck-toothed. That's called a class 2 malocclusion. Your kid is buck-toothed, the upper jaw is overgrown, and we're going to stunt the growth of the upper jaw in order to let the lower jaw catch up. They never say we're going to stunt the growth. They say we're going to slow the growth down. We're going to put your kid in a cervical headgear or a hypo headgear, a different type of headgear, which takes a strap of cloth or a piece of plastic behind the back of the neck.
Right.
And an arch wire that connects to the upper molars. And the strap on the back of the neck pulls against the arch wire. So they're using the spine of a kid in order to pull the upper jaw back. If you ask one of these, I was going to say idiots. If you ask one of these idiots, where are you pulling the upper jaw into? What anatomy are you pulling the upper jaw into? There's only one answer. And the answer is found in a grade 9 anatomy book. It's called the airway.
So they're literally pulling the jaw back into the child's airway.
Exactly. They're pulling the jaw back into the airway. And but they don't tell this to the patients, number one. Number two, they don't check the patency of the kid's airway. They just don't look.
Right.
Now, they also assume that the spine is fixed. But is the spine fixed or does it move? The vertebrae. The cervical, one of the vertebrae, you know, around the back of the neck, around the neck, is going to be, forced up against the back of the headgear. And there's a study a few years ago that came out, it's on our website, which found that the spine is actually pushed into the airway because the spine isn't fixed. So you're squishing the head and the spine gets squished in and the jaw gets squished back.
Wow.
Okay, so it gets kind of weird though. Mm-hmm. Starting in 1915, there was at least one paper every few years, a peer-reviewed paper in a major journal that said cervical headgears stunt the growth of the upper jaw. And when you stunt the growth of the upper jaw, the lower jaw is also stunted. And the whole face grows down and back. It's called the vertical response. It was coined as the headgear effect.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at papers on obstructive sleep apnea, and when they talk about the facial traits or the cranial morphology of sleep apnea, what you'll find is that they all say one thing.
when the face grows down and back and you have vertical growth, you have a patient who is predisposed to obstructive sleep apnea, which takes off 20 years from your life if it's severe enough. So if you go to an orthodontist office and he's giving or she's giving your kid a cervical headgear, if you ask me, that is like leaving a person for dead.
Wow.
Because you're
pretty extreme.
Exactly. Well, here's what I would ask someone who gives a kid a cervical headgear. I'd say, how long can you live without food? Oh, you know, a few weeks. How long without water? 10 days. How long can you live without straight teeth? There's no answer to that. Your whole life. How long can you live without air? We're talking a minute or two.
Right.
So, the Dentist Act states that the health of the patient is of utmost importance. Well, if the health is of utmost importance, that means respiration is of utmost importance. Mm-hmm. And here we are straightening teeth at the expense of a kid's respiration. So breathing is an orthodontic concern.
Yes.
And there are certain orthodontic practices that destroy breathing, destroy the ability to breathe. The next thing is retainers. I haven't seen any research on retainers, but if you go to righttogrow.org, you'll see all the research on headgear. But if you look at fixed retainers, I don't know any kid who hasn't worn a retainer. But what does a retainer do? It's a fixed piece of acrylic.
Right.
Can the jaw widen while a kid is wearing a fixed retainer? The question is no.
No.
And retainers are designed to keep the teeth where the orthodontist put them. And the kid wears the retainer at night. Guess why at night? Because that's when growth hormone is highest. Yeah. And when growth hormone is highest, that's when the kid is going to grow. So you have an industry that is stunting the growth of kids' skulls in order to keep the teeth straight. Does that make any sense? To me, that's an assault. It's a physical assault. It's a crime. These people should be accountable for. What I want to say is they should be jailed. That's what I want to say, but I don't want to be shot. But I said it. But it's a physical assault on a child.
Right.
It is a physical assault on a child and has to be stopped. So Right to Grow, we know, a pretty transparent organization. You know, the mission is to ban these practices. You see, if the upper jaw cannot widen when a kid is sleeping during their growth spurt years, what is happening to the nasal passages that are connected to the bone directly above the maxilla? What happens to the cheekbones? What happens to the lower jaw when the lower jaw is in a fixed retainer? It cannot widen either. And when the jaws can't widen, just look at an anatomy book. What happens to the airway when the jaws can't widen and the jaws can't come forward?
Well, from a graphic that you have shown there, that it looks pretty simple, that it gets cut off.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. I'm not an orthodontist. I'm not a dentist. In fact, what I do for a living is totally irrelevant. Who cares about me? I'm nobody. You don't even need to listen to me. Go to the website. There are interviews with dentists and orthodontists there who call for the ban on these procedures, who say, yes, this will cause sleep apnea. Yes, we are studying the growth of the skull. Yes, it impacts respiration. Yes, it is dangerous. Mm-hmm. I have 62 peer-reviewed journals going back to 1905 where the orthodontist says, holy cow, there is a major problem when the upper jaw cannot grow to completion. When the upper jaw cannot grow to completion. That's growing forward and that's widening.
Right.
When the upper jaw can't grow to completion, these papers talk about disastrous consequences. They talk about people being sick constantly. They talk about upper respiratory dysfunction. They didn't have the word sleep apnea back then. It was called upper respiratory dysfunction. And these papers that are literally 100 years old talk about people losing time at work, not being able to have a normal life, being mentally backwards. They weren't politically correct back then. They just said it, mentally backwards and slow.
Right.
Now, my personal story, I avoided the question. I didn't answer your question first because I hate going into my personal story because I don't like calling myself a victim. I'm actually glad this happened to me because it actually gives me something to do. So here's the bottom line. When I was a kid, I went to an orthodontist. A dentist referred me. And the funny thing is the dentist took us on a fishing trip after after we paid the orthodontist. And he paid for the fishing trip. And it was, I guess, his thank you. But anyways, we go to see my orthodontist, who was the head of orthodontics at UBC, okay? I have a shocker in this story for you, a big shocker. We go to sit with him, and he says, you know, your upper jaw is overgrown. We're going to have to slow the growth down to let your lower jaw catch up. That's going to correct your bucktoothness.
Right.
And I said, well, what are the alternatives? I don't want to wear this headgear. He said, well, extractions, but this will be better. And I said, there are no alternatives to this other than extractions? He said, no alternatives. Okay, what are the side effects? Well, there's only one side effect, which is that your lower jaw will continue to grow forward uncontrollably.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very easy surgery to do that. We cut a nerve on the side of your neck, and it happens very rarely. So in my head, I was thinking, oh, well, I'm buck-toothed, and I need my lower jaw to come forward to correct the buck-toothness. So the side effect is that my lower jaw comes forward too much. So the problem overcorrects. So it's not really a side effect, you know, and easily solved.
Right.
Okay, this is 1989. By 1989, there were already 50 peer-reviewed studies. There were about 40 peer-reviewed studies which stated that when you wear headgear, you have the headgear effect, which is that the lower jaw doesn't grow forward. The upper jaw grows down and back. The lower jaw grows down and back. So this is the head of orthodontics at UBC who's now passed away. So he can't come after me for defamation.
Right.
But these are just the facts, right? This is what was said. And, you know, that was a lie. That was a blatant lie. No side effects, right? And I suspect that every orthodontist who prescribes cervical headgears, they don't disclose the side effects. Now, if they don't know that these papers exist, then they're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And they're lying, because when you tell a patient, when you give a patient an appliance, and you don't talk about side effects, if the patient doesn't ask, that means they're trusting you, the orthodontist.
Right.
And they're trusting that you have checked for side effects. And if you check for side effects, you're going to see what's published. And if you're not going to disclose that to the patient, then you are assaulting them, because you know this could harm them, you know this could destroy their respiration, yet you're giving it to them.
Right.
Now, if you're too stupid to check for side effects, then you ought to tell that to your patient. You ought to say, look, I don't know if there are side effects. I haven't bothered to look. I'm a moron. I believed everything I was told in school. I never checked for side effects. There may be published side effects. You got to know this. You do your own research. I'm too dumb to read up. Right. That would be the right thing to do. But I don't think there are orthodontists who do that.
Right. Are there alternatives to this headgear?
These alternatives have been around since the 1800s. Bottom line is the orthodontic community is at war, okay? There are two camps, and they're at war with each other. You can ask an orthodontist. They will tell you this. Basically, you have the expansionists, and you have the extractionists, okay? The extractionists say, pull teeth out, pull teeth back, get them into place, use headgears, pull the face back, do not look at the airway, just look at the teeth.
Right.
You have the expansionists who have been around since 1800s and saying, look, you can widen. You can create space in the mouth by widening the airway, by widening the jaw. And these papers that are, in fact, some of them are written by doctors, by rhinologists, ear, nose, and throat doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And they say when you widen the upper jaw, you actually improve respiration.
Oh, it takes pressure off the airway.
Yeah, it increases the size of the airway, right? Yeah. And so these two camps, they've been at war with each other. So if you go to see an orthodontist, you're not going to get someone who does both. Because someone who's expanding the upper jaw in order to help a patient breathe better and create room for teeth isn't I'm looking for a word, but they're not mean enough to assault the airway of a child. They know what they're doing.
Right.
And if you ask them for headgears and extractions, they'll say, no, I'm not going to destroy the shape of your face. Because what happens is when you pull teeth out and pull the bones back, the skin grows to full size, but the bones don't. So the skin tends to sag. So people who've really had the headgear effect, they will have double chins, bigger noses, a little smaller chins. Mm-hmm. There was a study done on twins, actually, by Mike Mew and John Mew. They are legends in the non-extraction field of orthodontists. And they took twins and they used retractive and extractive orthodontics. Retractive, extractive. Retractive means pulling back, retract.
Right.
Okay, extractive is extracting teeth. So they did a study. They took twins. One of the girls in the study, when she saw how beautiful her sister was becoming, because her sister had the expansion work done,
right?
She stopped treatment, and if you look at the pictures of the twins, you'll see that the person who had the extractions and who had the face pulled back, they just look different. They just don't look the same.
Wow. So they've had this therapy.
Can I get into some more stupidity? I love getting into stupidity because I'm
We got 3 minutes worth of stupidity before we need to go to a break.
Prehistoric man did not need braces. They didn't need extractions. They didn't need headgears. If you look at their jaws are wider. Mm-hmm. If you have a kid and you care for your kid, you got to read up on Dr. Weston Price. Okay, if you don't care for your kid, you shouldn't be having a kid. Because people send their kids to orthodontists, but they don't check on the side effects.
Right.
If you really care for your kid, and you care for the rest of your life, the rest of your kid's life, you ought to be checking what the side effects are. So I tell parents it's your responsibility. If the orthodontist didn't tell you and you didn't check, you're the fool.
Which it's kind of funny about that is, as a parent, we'll go and we'll check into every medication that a medical doctor will prescribe. But for the most part, you go to, it's like, oh, well, his teeth aren't exactly straight. You go to the orthodontist and you take whatever they say as being the written Bible, or they must be right.
Yes.
We don't check past.
If you do what
them.
You're told and you don't question why and you don't question what the side effects are and you don't go and read up yourself as a parent, then you are doing an injustice to your child. And then we'll get into my personal story after this break here.
And
I want to talk about Weston Price too.
Okay. We'll be right back after this break.
Within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion.
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at CITR. So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Thank you.
And we're back here on the Community Living Radio on the NCRA networks. And we're back with Omar, who is with the Right to Grow organization. And we're going to continue the conversation for another few minutes with him. Okay?
Okay, Weston Price. Weston Price was a dentist many, many, many years ago who traveled to indigenous communities around the world, and he found out that they have straight, beautiful teeth, properly grown jaws, because they eat properly. He looked at modern man and he said, we eat like crap. We eat, refined sugar, refined foods. Our nutrition is no good, and that's the reason why we're not reaching our full genetic potential. And he said that's the reason why we have crooked teeth, because when we don't get the right nutrition, our bones don't grow properly. There's not enough room, therefore, in the upper jaw and
right.
the lower jaw. And other orthodontists, they don't listen to that. They say the reason why we have crooked teeth is because we don't need all those teeth. We've evolved to need fewer teeth, so let's pull those teeth out.
Oh, yeah.
We've evolved.
Like, we don't know this because when a dentist told me as an adult, when I was taking my own child to dentist, and he said, oh, you have your wisdom teeth? Well, you're a rare anomaly because you should have had them pulled years ago when you're a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, well, I had room and there was no pain, so they just grew in.
Yeah. So with proper nutrition, a kid's face grows properly, they have straight teeth, and you don't need a lot of orthodontic work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go into my personal story. Now I'll answer the question. I don't like doing it first because I don't like complaining and being a victim,
it's
right?
Okay.
So bottom line is, orthodontist says, hey, you're going to wear this headgear. And after wearing it, I just started to wake up later. I started to be really tired in the mornings. Mm-hmm. Got to the point where my sister was in the car on her way to school. Not on her way, they're in the drive with my mom. And I'm in my PJs, right? And they're waiting for me. Got to the point where I'd be brushing my teeth at school, eating breakfast at school as a teenager, sleeping in classes. I learned to sleep while jogging. And I wondered.
That's an amazing feat.
Well, I just closed my eyes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I wondered, how is everyone so chipper in the morning? I just wondered, how do these kids have time for early morning practice? I had to quit choir. I wanted to sing choir. I can't sing worth anything, but it's probably a good thing for the choir that I quit choir. But I was late for everything in the mornings. I was known as Mr. Late, and it just became part of my personality.
Right.
I'd sleep, after wearing my retainers, I would just be sleeping during lunch hour and recess. There's no socializing for me, very little. So come university, I'm just sleeping away through university. I did an internship, and honestly, my bosses hated me for being tired. You know, I'm getting ready on the bus, right? Doing, literally I would do anything to have a minute or two of sleep, right?
Right.
I'd be tying my tie on the bus, going to work, pretending to go to the bathroom, sleeping in there. And I have been fired from every job I ever had, right? Every job. My boss was like, Omar, you got to go, right?
Right.
And I literally never thought there's anything wrong with me. I always just thought, everyone else is screwed up.
Right.
For being so chipper and being able to wake up, have time for the paper, breakfast, and early morning workout, and be on time for work. I didn't know this was possible. Until 2013, okay, I had a job working for a guy who didn't mind that I was going to work late because I'd stay late too and I'd get my stuff done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up one morning and I could barely see. I couldn't move. I called my sister who was becoming a naturopath. She said, sounds like sleep apnea. Go to the walk-in clinic. Go to the walk-in. The doctor says, yeah, sounds like sleep apnea. We're going to go to the hospital. But do this little test first. I do a little test first. It's a take-home test. They use an infrared sensor to look at your blood oxygen levels in your finger. And it showed that I stopped breathing 46 times an hour. And the technician looked at the results and her jaw dropped. She said, this is serious. Now, this is inconclusive, by the way. But it's serious if it's true. You got to go to the hospital. They're going to put wires all over your face, all over your chest, up your nose. They're going to put leads on you. You're going to wear a helmet to sleep, basically.
Right.
I said, fair enough. I go to Surrey Memorial, and the report comes back, and it says when this guy goes into REM, he's choking 76 times an hour. That's more than once a minute. The study said that the guy has moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea. It's more severe than the study indicates, probably. I go to the ENT to go over the reports. He says, let me put a camera down your nose. Let me scope your airway. Wow. It's a quarter of the size it should be. You know what? Your maxilla, your upper jaw, is sitting in the spot where your airway should be. We got to bring it forward surgically. It's called the maxillomandibular advancement. It's the gold standard for sleep apnea surgery. They cut the upper jaw, they move it forward, they cut the lower, they break the upper jaw, they break the lower jaw, they move them forward. They open up the airway. So if you move the upper jaws forward and that opens the airway, how dumb do you have to be to figure out what moving them back does to the airway? Or to not figure that out, right?
Right.
So how dumb do you have to be to speak properly? So anyway,
hey, it's still early in the morning.
Yeah. So, boy, I was pissed. Right. I was pissed because I thought of the headgear. I said, this guy pulled my upper jaw back, and now I got to put it forward so I can breathe properly. I haven't done the surgery. I'm wearing CPAP machine. A CPAP machine, that's why I'm here and can talk to you at, you know, 9-something in the morning because I'm awake, because I'm breathing.
Yeah. Quickly, can you explain what a CPAP is?
Yeah, it's a mask you wear on your face. It's like what a fighter jet wears. It looks like the same thing, except it's nowhere near as attractive as a fighter jet, right? You've got this thing on your mouth when you're sleeping.
Right.
And it's connected to essentially a medical grade air pump with a medical grade filter, and it pumps air up, you know, through your nose.
So while you sleep, you have to have air forced.
Yeah, you have to have the forced air. And what the forced air does is it props open your airway. It prevents your tongue from falling back into your airway. Because when you sleep at night, the muscles in the mouth and the tongue and the palate, they relax. And your airway should be big enough, so if the muscles relax, they don't block the airway. Whereas if someone's bones were pushed back and squished, the tongue does grow to full size. The tissues grow to full size. All of a sudden, when they relax, they shut the airway off. I want to talk about blood flow, okay? If you just look at the bottom view of a human skull and you Google an image, carotid canal, you're going to see a hole in the skull, okay, or a duct, and that is where the carotid artery passes through.
Right.
If you're giving a kid headgear and you're stunting the growth by compressing the spine against the upper jaw, lines of force pass through the carotid canal. So are we stunting the growth of kids' blood flow pathways? Have we even looked at that?
That's a good question. So, how does everybody get a hold of you to get more information?
Okay. Go to righttogrow.org. 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 you can email me. You could email me because if you have a story, I want to publish it. You can email me at olalan, that's N like Nancy, i@gmail.com. My email address is on the website. It's under patient stories. You'll see my story there. You know, if you have a kid who's wearing headgear, take it off. Wearing retainers, take them off. Last thing. Yeah, send me your story. So last thing, okay? When I was told my airway was a quarter size it should be and my max I was too far back, I spent 2 years at the UBC library. My cousin helped me get access to the journals, and that's when I found, you know, the 60-plus journals, peer-reviewed, that say when you stunt the growth of the upper jaw, when the upper jaw doesn't grow fully, or when you use headgear to pull the upper jaw back, you have disastrous consequences on respiration. And these papers all come before 1989. But in 1986, there was a paper written at UBC by the head of orthodontics. His name is Dr. Alan Lowe. The paper is all about the cranial morphology of moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea. In 1986, we knew that when the upper jaw grows down and back and the lower jaw grows down and back, it's called vertical growth. When you have excess vertical growth of the lower third of the face, a person is predisposed to obstructive sleep apnea. You look at the cranial morphology of obstructive sleep apnea. It's an upper jaw that is grown down and back or undergrown, a lower jaw down and back, undergrown, a high-pitched palate.
Right.
And those are all side effects, known published side effects of orthodontic treatment with cervical headgear.
Wow. Well, Omar, thanks for stopping in.
Thanks for having me.
I put some of your information up on our Facebook page already.
Okay.
So our listeners can actually click through straight to the Right to Grow website and contact you directly.
Thank you.
That way. So, again, and keep us up to date as to how the fight with the orthodontics and goes. And
We're trying to improve how they treat patients. Yeah. We don't want to, you know, shut the industry down. I got to sound nice to them too now, right? I can't be too bad. Right?
No, but we want to make sure that we're giving the right treatment to
our kids
at the same time, right?
Yeah. People can change how they do work. So.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Again, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. So we're going to flip over to Skype here, and Kelly is going to join us from Cambodia.